Hi guys, welcome back to the Rugby Abroad podcast. Got an absolute belter of an episode today with Perry Parker, experienced English second rower. I'm sporting some of the new merch from the Rugby Abroad shop. Visit us at rugbyabroad.com/shop for more. Discount code WELCOME10 will get you 10% off anything in the shop. In the next few days, we'll be announcing the winner of last month's competition. As always, give the podcast a like and don't forget to subscribe. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, guys, to the Rugby Abroad podcast. Today, I've got Perry Parker with me for episode 19. Really great to meet you, mate. Why don't we start with a little introduction? I don't know if you could tell us how you got onto your rugby journey. Where did it all start and how did you end up getting abroad to play such an amazing career, really?
So I started playing rugby when I was 4 years old for a team called Crawley in Gatwick, and then played there until I was about 10 years of age, so all the way through the minis. And myself and the family moved down to the south coast to a town called Worthing. They've got a team now, it was called Worthing RFC, but now they're called Worthing Raiders. Played for Worthing from about 10 years old until about 17, 18. And I started playing my first national level rugby when I was 16. So I played for Worthing, which was the old National 2, which would have been, so that's before the Champ day. So National 1 back then, Champs, and Nat 2 was like Nat 1. Played for Worthing until I was about 17 and then moved over to Haywards Heath because we moved town. Played for Haywards Heath in National 3, I think it was, and captained them for 2 years. Then went over to Esher when they were in the Championship. So I went from Haywards Heath to Esher and spent, that was my first sort of professional sort of contract with Esher Rugby when they were in the Championship, 2011 that was. Played for Esher for a season. Probably had one of my best seasons in my career, really. Was quite raw still from not having any sort of academy or any sort of like private school education. So I didn't really ever enter an academy system or kind of like a proper rugby setup. It was all just kind of like men's rugby through like the national leagues. Went and played a season. Esher played really well and just had a few offers from Wales. And so Ospreys offered me and I think Edinburgh and a few others, but I chose Edinburgh. Went to Scotland and played for about a year and a half for Edinburgh, which is great. Got injured quite badly. I tore my hip cartilage and syndesmosis in my right ankle. So I sat out for, I'd say, half of the first season, but played about 16 games for them. Then went on loan to Ospreys. So the back end of my second season at Edinburgh, went on loan to Ospreys for about 6 months. Played with the Ospreys for the rest of that season. Then went from Ospreys to Rotherham Titans when they were good. played for Rov when they were in a Champ. That's when Bristol was there. So 14-15 season. Played for Rov. We made top four. So we played against Bristol in the court on the semis, which is really good. And then I kind of realised that unless I got a Prem gig or back into like the Rabo, which it was at the time, it was maybe kind of like the idea or the option to like look abroad. And I had a few offers in France, but the biggest attraction was to play in Italy. Offered a contract for Rovigo, Rugby Rovigo Delta, which is, I'd say, one of, if not the top team in the, it's called the top 10 now, or the Peroni top 10.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so went there as obviously a foreigner. Went there with my ex-girlfriend, and I remember arriving at Venice Airport. So Rovigo is kind of like on the north, right near Venice. I got picked up by the team manager and his missus at like 11:30 at night from actually, we did a route. We flew from Gatwick and we had a little sausage dog and we had to fly with the dog in the aeroplane. I didn't know you could do that. I thought the dogs had to go in the hold. So we flew on KLM to I think it was Netherlands, and then went from Netherlands to Italy with the sausage dog underneath our seat. got to Venice quite late. And I remember looking for him. He had a sign for me, just said Perry Park or whatever it was. And he didn't speak a word of English. So he had like an iPad that he was using Google Translate to tell me everything via his wife, his minibus. jumped in a bus, spent three amazing years there, then went to France, then back in the UK for two in the National Leagues, or 3 years now. So that's a quick round.
Wow, nice, mate. Yeah, that was a nice little European tour.
Yeah.
I've been on a similar one myself. You mentioned Rovigo. I just spent the last couple of years in Italy. Playing up in San Donà for 1 year before they just got chucked out. Well, they chucked themselves out the league because they cancelled all our contracts during the COVID situation. But that was a great spot up there. I know Rovigo's not far from there, and that's an awesome place of the world, to be honest. You can't go wrong with Italian culture. So tell me something, mate. When you were in the championship with Isha, the old national one, was it common for guys to make the step up? Because obviously you hear about the championship. I played a year myself at Jersey Reds, and you hear a lot of comments about the championship being like the graveyard essentially of English rugby. And it seems like you came to that realization that not many people do of, well, how likely is it? Am I going to make the step up to Prem? You know, you're probably like myself. I thought I quite backed myself to have the ability to step up, but it was just how many people are ahead of me in my position? What are the chances that I'm going to be able to make the step up? Not in terms of quality, but just in terms of, you know, just pure chance at the end of the day. And was that quite a obvious one at the time, or because many?
So I'd say there's two spectrums to the champ. So when I was when I went from Hayward Heath to Isha, so it was a champ then. It's when like London Welsh, and those sort of teams were in it, and it was for me it was a stepping stone because I was still very young. I was only 22/23, and I think there's two sides to it. There's the side where you're young, raw, and you've got something, and then you get pulled out quite quick. So I only spent one season there. Had like Edinburgh and Ospreys that wanted to sign me. And then the other side of the spectrum is you've got the guys that have played, I don't know, maybe two or three years in the Prem or the Rabot or France, drop down on sort of quite good money, and they're like the experienced head. Then the other side are guys that are trying to cling on to become a pro that are on like 10K a year. And it's just kind of like a dogfight at the bottom of the champ. So I think there's like three different spectrums to it. I think it's quite nice. I think it should still be regarded as a stepping stone, but also there's them other two sort of spectrums where you can get stuck and just be on really bad money and get treated like toilet, or be the older head guy that are in the top four, you know, they're on that kind of like 50, 60K mark, like the Ealing boys, and still make a good living out of it and still play rugby full time.
Yeah, I feel like there's not many guys in that category anymore, and those guys are maybe moving even down to National One to get that level. Would you say that's about right?
Yeah, so I think, I won't say numbers, but I was the highest paid at Rov in the 14-15 season, and my contract, so I signed at Old Altamian. So I was in Stade Dijonais for a while. I had 3 years, but I pulled out 2 years early because it wasn't life-changing money, and I thought, look, rugby's not forever. I need to set up for after. So I got approached by Old Altamians in the 19-20 season to come back. So they got me a full-time job in the city, worked for their kind of main sort of sponsor, selling cybersecurity, and then sort of like a match fee and sort of signing bonuses and blah, blah. So I think the money that I was on with the job and all the money with rugby at Old Altamians was a good sort of like high-end champ contract. Those national run contracts are slowly depleting a bit, but you can still earn good money playing semi-pro in that one, that two, and work, which I'm doing now.
Yeah, what would you say would be like a advice to guys in that similar position? Maybe just coming out of university or out of school, playing that kind of level, national one level, thinking about maybe stepping up to championship. Is it worth it? Like you mentioned, it's a stepping stone. I feel like it is still a stepping stone, but like I was in a situation, I was 24 years old, 25 when I went to Jersey, I think. And it was like, kind of make or break. I had a great year, and I ended up getting a move to France, to the Pro D2 in France off the back of that. But it was kind of lucky, I think, because I had a lot of mates at a similar level to myself who were really stuck. They were maybe like 3-4 years playing great level. Don't get me wrong. Championship rugby is a great level, and it's the professionalism's right up there. It's just, I remember, you know, the guys are earning pennies at times, and it's for not much reward. You get the professional rugby experience, but not the the professional rugby kind of facelift, I guess.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, it all depends really on what age you are. I know guys that were at ROV that are on like 10K or below that were fighting in around the mid-20s to late-20s, and it's like, it should have happened by now, and then those guys are still in the champ or they've retired. So I would say for someone that's young in a university or college, that's looking to make it, maybe that followed my route and hasn't got like the academy, like Queen's Academy or private school, like Millfield or whatever it is you have to literally put everything into it. I was driving from Hassocks, which is in Sussex near Brighton.
Yeah.
And I was working at the time. So I did a degree in design, and then I got a job in design while I was playing national rugby, and I was there for 2 years. And then when I signed at Esher, I was still working full time. So Esher was pretty much full time as well, probably 80% full time. And I would drive up to the station. I forgot the station, not Sunbury. It's basically, there's a station on the road by Esher Rugby Club. I would drive in the morning, park at the club, go to work, spend the whole day at work, gym at the club, train in the club, come home, eat, go to bed and do it all again pretty much every day, bar like Friday. And it's like intense. Like I've cut out all drinking, I cut out all partying. You've got to go all in to make something happen. It doesn't just happen overnight. Yeah, it doesn't happen easy, really.
Totally. I think people kind of take that level for granted as well. Especially, I guess, did you have in your head that you wanted to be a pro at some point? You wanted to have this rugby journey, or did it just kind of like happen?
I've always been the big, tall, slow, heavy kid at everything. But I've always been a second row throughout my whole career. Until you made it into like the minis when everyone was just running around like headless chicken. And I was always stuck in a row, and I was always second row. I was always told I was one of the best players on the pitch, and you never really take notice of it until you get to like that national three rugby, where it's like you're head and shoulders above everyone. Maybe you should look at trying to do that. And there was one guy called Eric Liebenberg, and he was a South African guy. He was a tight head, but he was at the enemy's crease. He said, "Look, mate, I really think you should go to somewhere like in the champ, and I should want and try, and I can have a little word with someone." And he knew Mike Schmidt, who was a head coach. Esher said, "Look, I think you should take a look at Perry." And I was on no money at Esher at the start. I had nothing, not even expenses really. I think it's 50 quid a week expenses max.
Yeah.
and I think that season I was the best second row in the championship. So that just came from me having raw talent. And also as well, looking back, I didn't have any pressures that I had once I knew what rugby is about. So at Esher, there was no sort of like pressurized review on a Monday. If you miss a tackle, your name gets called out. I just literally played rugby and it was amazing. The reason why it's the best time of my career, because there was no stress, there was no heavy gym, there was no heavy nutrition, there's none of that like what's your highest squat jump, what's your high, all the stats. And that only really started coming in like around that year that I left Esher. So thinking back, I would say for someone that's moving up, is to you've really got to go all in on it. Really got to go all in.
Do you think you were lucky then that it wasn't super, super professionalised at that time? Would it have put you off?
I've never really been a gym like monkey. Like, there's a lot of boys that focus heavy on the gym. I've been quite sort of rugby strong. I'm just big and heavy, and I can do like the heavy, dirty work. Whereas some lads are so... I mean, if you look at top level now, I would say the second rows could play 6, 7 or 8. Like Mauro can play all the way across the back 5.
Yeah.
I'm probably one of the last old giraffes. like that Jim Hamilton. Like, I mean, I know Jim quite well. Jim Hamilton, sort of like old, tall, like workhorse, bit of an enforcer. There's not really many of us left. But I don't mind a gym. There are boys that are heavy on the gym and heavy on the nutrition, heavy on having a six pack and all that sort of rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely rubbish, mate. I don't know who's interested in that stuff. Not us backs, anyway.
Yeah.
mate, so you played in Italy for 3 years. That was the kind of longest time away. Obviously, you signed a 3-year in Dijon in France, but that didn't work out. How was Italy? Did you absolutely love it? 3 years is a long time to be in a foreign country. You must have fell in love with the place.
Yeah, I mean, I look back and I wish I could do it all over again. I signed there as a foreigner, and I signed with quite big expectations. So I had quite a good CV when I arrived. So I was on good money, like I got a house and a car, and you're looked upon quite early on to kind of like be the extra bit of sort of talent, be that like that star player. And that was made obvious from the start. But they hadn't won the championship for 25 years since I'd been. So the year that I arrived, they hadn't won the season or the league or the campeonato for like 25 years. And we won it in my first season. And I really went in on like learning language. I really tried to build into the culture. And I think that sat really well with them because I wasn't just, I don't talk bad about some players, but sometimes like the Saffa boys don't really get involved and they kind of don't really want to learn the language. And they're a little bit sort of outcast. They all sit at home and have a barbecue. And they didn't really build into the culture. But I really went all in. I tried to learn the language. I wanted to eat with the boys at lunch. I wanted to be involved in the city. And I think Rovigo is a 360 town of rugby. They live and breathe the team. We all had like sign written cards with our numbers. And they all shout your names. You go down the street. So it's proper like, it'll be like having Chelsea football team like in a small village in like, I don't know, the Cotswolds or something. It's literally like so intense.
Yeah.
Best 3 years of my life, I would say. Just got so much respect. We won it, which is great. And I think I, again, played some of my best rugby for the first two seasons. Last season was a bit funny. The coach tried changing everything. He was an ex-All Black.
Did you only win it once?
Yeah, so the first season in 15-16, we won it. Second season, we had a great season. We got to the final. But back in them days, in the top four or the top 10 or whatever it's called now, is that the top four, first played fourth and second played third. And then whoever finished top of the league, the top made the final. They played the home final at home. Yeah. So the first season we played in front of Rovigo, which is amazing. And the second season we finished second and we played Calvisano at Calvisano. And I remember us going, we rocketed up by like three or four tries. And they had some boys that are now playing for Italy and in the Prem. And I remember it got to like 5-10 minutes before second half. And that Matteo, I think it's Minozzi, the young fullback, he's at WASC now. And yeah. Mate, just turned it on, and he scored like three or four tries and got about four or five kicks. So, and we lost in Calvisano. So that's heartbreaking. And the third year, kind of fell out of bed with the coach a bit. Like I've got a scan on my shoulder, and the doctor said you've got basically your shoulder's minced. You've got like no rotator cuff. You've got no labrum. It's all just completely minced. So you need an operation. And the coaches wouldn't let me get an op. They said, look, you kind of like one of the main key players. You can't stop. And I was just like, so obviously I was lifting weaker, not that I lifted a lot, but I lifted a lot weaker, and it affected my game quite a lot. So the third year was quite tough. We lost in the, so I didn't play, I got a bad back, really bad size carry. We lost in the semis, I think. So I ended my Italian sort of career quite bad, not badly. I started really well and then kind of just gradually fell down.
Yeah. But you said, it was a great experience. You bought into it. I think that's the key, and especially with the culture and the language and stuff like that. I've had my own sort of experience with that in various countries. You know, if you do that pretty early on, wherever it is, if it's France, Spain, you know, Italy, you buy into the language and stuff. Not only have you got a cultural experience there, but I'm sure you've kept the language as well. And you probably use that in your day to day, I imagine.
I do actually. So when I played in Dijon, there was a lad there that spoke Italian, so I spoke to him every day in Italian because I didn't speak French. So there's always, I now use it at work. Obviously, I'm in recruitment now in tech, so I use it.
Cool.
Had an Italian guy in my team. He's left now, unfortunately, but he was Italian, so I spoke to him in Italian. So it is really nice, and it's quite nice to hold. There's loads of memories that I take from it. There's loads of amazing times that we had, but learning a language is pretty cool. I would say I'm about 80%. Language, like, not fluent. I don't know if you can say 80% fluent, but I can speak it about 80%.
Yeah, pretty much native. Well, yeah. What do they say? Business proficient.
Business, right. Yeah. B2.
You can get by.
Yeah.
Mate, no, it was pretty similar to Spanish for me, Italian. My missus is Spanish, so I've been out in Spain for a couple of years. Well, I was out in Spain about 8 years ago, and then I'm back now to sort of the twilight years. Just to finish off the playing career, make the transition into
coaching.
Playing
now, are you?
Yeah, still playing for well, we actually, it's funny you mentioned the 15-16 season. That was my second year out in Spain, and we just my team won the league and cup double for the first time before I moved on, and that was a brilliant experience. That one, we like, to be honest, I know like Italy is probably more of a sort of well-positioned rugby nation. You know, when I heard about Spain playing rugby in Spain, I was just like, what? Nah, couldn't be. And I went out just off, had a couple of mates that were out here, and they just said to me, hey, why don't you come out, use your degree, I just finished at Loughborough Uni, and I was like, I had a couple of championship offers, and they were literally like 10 grand offers. And I was like, what am I going to, I've just been on a placement year as well, doing some work in the city, you know, earning like three or four times that. And I was like, look, I mean, I think I need to use my degree for something, and ended up having this great job offer opportunity with the main sponsor of the club out here. And sat in on the sales team for a year, which was brilliant. Anyway, end of that year, I just decided that rugby, you know, I wanted to pursue it. I still had this urge to just focus on rugby only. And the club gave me an opportunity to be like one of their professionals. Yeah, and that's story started for me like that. So it's funny. You talk about these kind of like, what do they call it? Opening doors, no. Like swinging doors moments where you just like, you either take an opportunity or you don't, you know. For me, it was like I turned down a championship offer to get abroad just because I didn't feel it valued me as a player and as, you know, as a qualified person as well. Ended up having a rugby career off the back of it going the other route. And I think that's kind of the story a lot of the time in today's like world. You've got guys finishing university, good rugby players, probably finishing school as well, not really understanding that there's other options out there. You know, like people value English rugby players, and it might be made a little bit harder with Brexit now, just to get your visa sorted to play in Europe or whatever. But maybe we were lucky when we first moved abroad in that sense. But I mean, guys are just giving up on the rugby and just going straight to work, you know. And I think they're missing out on these experiences that we look back on and say they were the best. It was the best few years of my career, best few years of my life, amazing culture. You know, this could be available to every solid National 1, National 2 rugby player that's out there. So that's the reason really for the podcast, is, you know, to get this message out there that it's more than just what's around the corner on the front door, you know.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, mate. I had to ask you. I've got a couple of questions that have come in from a couple of listeners of the podcast. Who's the strongest lad you've come across on your travels? You can't say yourself.
Definitely not myself. played with or played against, like gym wise or rugby wise. Like, do you mean as a player or as a gym?
Yeah, give it a both if you fancy. If you can think of them on the spot.
I would say. There's a lot of players. Ross Ford was pretty strong, the hooker for Edinburgh and Scotland. He was Ford, he was really strong.
In the gym, on the pitch?
Both. In the gym, I would say more in the gym. I mean, no, he's really strong on the pitch as well, but I'm thinking about
freaks. Yeah, was he a freak? Like, can you put his numbers out there, like 300 kg squat?
I mean, like he could like clean like 125 like it was 10 kilos. And I was like barely benching 125. So I'll tell you who was really strong in the gym. He was at Ospreys at the time. Now he's moved to, who is he? Well, he's now at Cardiff Blues prop. I think he's Russian, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I forgot his name.
The Russians are built different, aren't they?
He was just repping like 110 kilo shoulder press on a barbell in the gym. And I was like, what are you doing? there's loads of boys that are just hitting ridiculous. Hamish Watson actually was a freak in the gym, the back rower Edinburgh. He was like, he could like wide grip shoulder press with like 60 kgs around his waist. Just literally just rep it out. He had a back like that. He was really strong. I think that's why he's done so well, because he's got such a powerful handoff and he's so powerful and he's quite short, but he had a back. But yeah, he was a freak in the gym.
Nice. Hey, mate, I've got another question. It's quite specific, so bear with me. Who's the best back row you've played with who's played international rugby for a tier 2 nation?
Matt Foles. It has to be, wouldn't it?
I don't know who sent that question in. It's just anonymous listeners, mate.
I'm not sure who that is. Yeah, it can't be anyone I know.
Matt Foles. I think he's actually playing in my team now out in Spain.
Is he? You together now, are you?
Yeah, that's right. He's we played together in that year that I was talking about, the 15-16 season, won the league and cup together here, the big double. Yeah. And Yeah, he's come back for some more, hasn't he?
I nearly made it out to Spain. I got offered a contract. I never remember their name. They were black and white. I think they were the
top. That's my team, El Salvador.
Yeah, El Salvador. So I got offered the same time I was going to Dijon in France.
Yeah.
I had a Spanish offers and then a French offers and obviously English stuff. It was a really nice offer, but I wanted to go and taste the French life.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting. We might have, you know, oh, I've remembered the phrase, sliding doors.
Sliding doors.
Sliding doors moment. Yeah. I've got there in the end. Now who knows? We might have crossed paths, mate.
We've been teammates, mate.
Yeah, who knows? This is the thing. This is the thing about just picking up the phone.
Yeah.
No, mate, I think that's it for the listeners' questions.
Yeah.
Always get a classic food section on the poddy. Yeah. I won't keep you from your busy schedule. I know you've got to hit the gym tonight.
I have to. Well, I've got to try and make out like I'm doing something.
Mate, when you're up in Scotland, did you get into the haggis at all?
I did. Yeah, I really did.
Fan?
I got into the culture up there again. The boys are amazing. Food's wicked up there. Haggis, neeps and tatties. There's lots of like classic Scottish food. And again, the boys really appreciate it when you buy into it. You know, like I really wanted to kind of like taste everything and go out and do all the things, you know, drink the whiskey at certain times and do all the things that like New Year's, the Hogmanay in Edinburgh. Edinburgh is amazing, by the way. I don't know if
you're at certain times. Nice.
Yeah, at certain times, exactly that.
I have been up once to Edinburgh, but I was a lot younger, not old enough to appreciate it.
Right. I mean, all the places I've played in are pretty special, but Edinburgh is probably one of the best cities that I've ever been in or lived in. Just because it's got everything, you know, it's got wicked restaurants, it's got wicked bars, wicked gyms. Like, it's just got everything, you know, everything there was lived in a really nice flat, one a couple of players. And it was just, you know, when you don't have anything else to do to look after yourself, it's really nice. Amazing city, good food. Yeah, everything's special, special place.
Awesome. And obvious one, but we've got to ask it. You played in Italy, pizza or pasta?
Pasta.
Yeah,
interesting. I mean, look, pizza's wicked, but some of the pastas out there were just like, I made a thing about trying to travel around all the key like locations, because every sort of region's got its own dialect and language.
Yeah.
Every region's got its own pasta. So you got like cacio e pepe down south in Rome. You've got like up north, there's like special types of like amatriciana, which is all the different sort of like ragus and stuff. And you've got bolognese, like Bologna do like the ragu for the bolognese. Don't call it bolognese, by the way. Don't call it that.
Ragu, mate. Ragu, I know that.
Ragu. And then they've got like, you've got the lasagna, like lasagna di nonna. So there's all these different sort of pasta.
Mate, I was almost going to put in that question as a trick question for you, ragu or bolognese. See if I wouldn't have caught you out, would I?
Not have slipped me up on that, mate. I made this mistake myself. Pizza's wicked in Italy, but pasta for me, yeah, every day of the week.
Mate, I must say I'm on the other side of the fence, but, you know, I was there during COVID and we didn't get to travel around that much. And where we were, the pizzas were just unbelievable. So maybe that's from lack of experience. I can't really talk.
Yeah,
mate, not going to lie, had a look you up on social media. And saw XR Parker. Now, you'd be preaching to the converted here because I'm a bit of a cryptomaniac myself.
But
it would be cool to convert the rest of the rugby community.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had to tell someone who had like absolutely no idea what the hell I'm talking about, what's going on, like in your life and in the sort of crypto space, what it is exactly, could you do it for like a rugby person, like in like 2 minutes?
could I convert it all over to what's going on,
or just what is crypto? Because I'm sure a lot of listeners have no idea or on the fence.
So I've been involved in crypto and like blockchain since 2016. So I first started buying and holding crypto when I was playing in Italy, when I had spare cash, when Ethereum was below 100 euros, so it's quite cheap. And I think that the easiest way to explain it would be it's digital currencies or digital tokens. You can buy and hold trade and sell crypto on things called wallet. You can hold it on wallets, like cold or warm wallets, and you can buy and sell it on exchanges, which are like platforms where you can buy the token. You can hold it on the exchange, but it's not as safe as it is if you put it onto the cold storage. Blockchain itself doesn't just do things to buy and hold, it has utility. So there's a thing called the XRPL, which is the ledger for XRP. And it has pure utility. So it's kind of used for cross-border payments. It's used for sending huge amounts of money at 0.00 second, like billions of dollars in 0.0 second for like zero pennies. So yeah. It's all about utility. And I only advise people to invest or hold coins that hold utility or have value.
By the way, not financial advice. None of this is.
Yeah, NFA. Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, don't listen to me. It's fascinating, actually, and I mean, if it all comes off, I'll have hopefully a nice retirement. But it's interesting, very interesting.
Nice. That was good. That was a good brief little explanation. I like it. Hopefully, not too complicated.
I hope did it quite in basic terms then as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have written it off now. Like, for me, it's just a little bump in the road on the way to the future, essentially. I don't know.
You have to look at it. Like, I don't know. Most people, we're like retail investors, right? People come in and go, oh, it's Bitcoin 60K. Oh, my God, I want to get in. And the issue is the retail guys and the newbies come in because they think it's the thing to do. Then when it crashes, you go, it's a scam. But if you've been in the cycles of the bull and the bear market for every 4 years, which I have done it twice now, you know it's going to go up again tenfold. So I don't trade it. I just buy and hold. That's it. You only lose when you sell, right?
That's it. You've got XRP is your sort of must be, it's, which is Ripple, right? The organization Ripple. And I actually made a bit of a nice little investment before the whole thing dumped out. Well, not dumped out, but, you know,
crashed.
When it was at one of its higher points. So I made a nice little bit of cash off that. Helped me with a few other investments, which was great. So, you know, there's opportunities, not financial advice, but, you know, we touched upon it. But rugby people are already in it. You've got Charles Piatow, who was trying to launch, I think, an NFT project. NFTs, for those who don't know, and correct me if I'm totally wrong, non-fungible tokens, essentially digital art or anything digital with a digital code attached to it, which makes it unique. Would you?
Yeah, so it means, so I'm actually in a project now where we're doing rugby NFTs and sport NFTs launching.
Christmas.
So similar to what, I don't know what Charles is doing, I didn't know he was doing that, but it's digital art, which means it can't be forged. Obviously some art can be forged, some art can be stolen, whereas NFTs, once they've been minted and they're brought and they're held, they are one-off pieces and that can never be forged, it can never be passed on. It's got a trail from when it was made to when it was minted to then when it's owned.
Right.
It's almost like
the minted bit is going to go over loads of people's heads. So
yeah, no, we won't talk about minted.
Should we just leave it there? But NFTs, we might have to have a chat about this because I've got some projects on the go in the rugby space which might need a bit of that.
Nice
bit of that looked at, but that's for another time.
Yeah,
mate. So you mentioned academies before, and you didn't get into a Prem one. Would you say you like started a bit later? You hit your kind of peak, maybe your physical peak. You're a second row at a later stage than maybe the guys that you know get picked up at 15, 16 into this Sarri's Academy or the Wasps Academy, and they basically set in there for until they're 21 or 18, 19, get the first team contract, and then, you know, there's no space for these other guys that maybe develop later. Do you think that's still like the case for young people? Is it a make or break there?
I would say it's difficult because nutrition and S&C is a lot more easier to get hold of in terms of knowledge now, and it's more open to the masses rather than when we were in those sort of pro setups. It was almost not secretive, but everyone kind of kept what they did quite secretive, whereas now everyone goes to the gym, everyone knows about plyometrics, everyone knows about nutrition and carbs and different ways of eating and what to take at night and the omegas and all the different things and supplements you can take, and it's easier to have that sort of pro setup outside of it if that makes sense. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was when I first started, I didn't even know what a plyometric was or what flipping, whatever the jump this was. I didn't know anything about it or bands. So I think it's more common and it's easier to understand what you need to do to be at level to be in the academy. The issue you've got is that I didn't have any private school. I was in Sussex set up, so county level, and I had the South of England watch me one game. But I really, if you want the easier route, you need to be in like a private school or have a scholarship or whatever you want to call it. Or you have to be in some form of setup to give you a leg up. You can do it the route I did, but it's a harder road.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I don't disagree with you. I think there's a bit of imbalance there. I actually was at a private school, but didn't make it in the academy system. So I did take another route as well. But you know, that's just it, each to their own. But just before we finish off, mate, any like plans for the future, like with rugby? Are you thinking about continuing in the game, or is it something that you're gonna stop your playing career and leave behind now, hang those boots up forever?
Yeah, I'm 35 and my body is battered. I'm playing National 2 rugby now, so it's still good, but it's still quite intense. You've got the young whippets that are trying to be someone and make it up to the kind of high levels that we were just talking about, young lads that are full of spunk. So it's quite, it's still quite grueling on the body. So I've got this year, it's hard, man. It's been my life, right? And I still love the game, and I do it pretty much every day. I go to the gym, I go to training, I eat well, I sleep well. So I don't know. I would reassess at the end of this year, see how we go on TJ's. I maybe, depending on how we go, if we stay in National 2, then I will stay in National 2. If we go up to National 1, I won't go back up, I don't think. I'd like to maybe drop down a level and be like a player coach. I was approached by a couple of teams in National 3 to be like player coach. So I don't think I could fully pull myself out yet. It all just depends on how busy work gets and how intense that is, and not babies and family life. And that's all about balance.
Brilliant. Perry, mate, thanks so much for this episode. You've been absolutely class, mate. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you. Hopefully we'll speak again soon, boss.
100%. Thank you. Take it easy. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, man. Thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening, guys. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And to listen to all our episodes and much, much more, visit us at rugbyabroad.com.